Tonight, the dramatic testimony before the American people. What really happened behind the scenes on January 6th? The very heated phone call between President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence that very morning. Tonight, the testimony from Ivanka Trump and others, the call in the Oval Office. Multiple witnesses, what the former president said to Mike Pence, what he called him. The January 6th committee revealing the former president's pressure campaign on Pence, calling on him to overturn the election, declaring Trump the winner, or to send it back to the states. What Pence repeatedly told the former president leading up to January 6th. Hours later on that day, the violence underway at the Capitol, the president informed of it all, and still the tweet Trump sent out on Mike Pence that he didn't have the courage. What the violent mob can then be heard saying on Capitol Hill, the committee pointing out they were directly reacting to what they were hearing from the president. And even after the horrific violence, another late message to Mike Pence, the lawyer working with Trump, saying there was still time to do this, to not certify the election. Jonathan Carl standing by with the testimony. Also at this hour, the severe storms we're watching in the east as we come on the air, a tornado watch now in effect from parts of Pennsylvania to New York. Severe thunderstorms from the Carolinas all the way up into the northeast. Damaging winds possible. Rob Marciano standing by to time this out. The war in Ukraine, and tonight it's now believed three Americans fighting for Ukraine are now missing. At least two of them feared captured by Russia. James Longman in Ukraine with what we're now learning tonight. The top ISIS leader captured by the U.S. Tonight, U.S. officials saying he planned attacks against U.S. forces and what we've now learned about the raid that took him down. The developing headline involving baby formula yet again. The Abbott facility in Michigan tonight now shut down once more. This time, because of severe storms and flooding damage, they say it could be weeks. The economy tonight, the Dow falling below 30,000 today, its lowest point in more than a year now. Tonight, President Biden saying recession is not inevitable, but what he did say about American families feeling this pain. And the countdown is on tonight, the big showdown in Boston.
From ABC News World Headquarters in New York, this is World News Tonight with David Muir.
Good evening, and it's great to have you with us here on a Thursday night. And we begin tonight with the dramatic testimony in front of the American people today, the findings from the January 6th committee, their third hearing now, and this one focusing on former President Trump and the extraordinary pressure he placed on his vice president, Mike Pence, in the weeks leading up to January 6th, and then what happened on that very day. Starting with a heated phone call from the Oval Office, the president, the vice president, and multiple witnesses to this call. The president pushing Pence to block the certification of the election on that night. Tonight, the images from the committee today from inside the Oval Office, the morning of January 6th. Members of President Trump's inner circle, from daughter Ivanka Trump, top aides and counsel, all describing in testimony today the president's call to the vice president, describing the call as heated. The president telling Pence he had no courage, calling him a wimp and worse, what we won't say here. After that call, the rally on the Mall, and initially the president's written speech did not mention Pence. But the committee today revealing the president added Pence to his speech, saying it was essentially all up to Pence, telling the crowd Pence had the power to overturn Biden's election victory, saying, quote, Mike Pence is going to have to come through for us. Even though Trump's inner circle, White House lawyers, and Pence himself had repeatedly told the president that the vice president does not have that power. And then after the violence was underway, the president, aware the attack was unfolding, at 2:24 p.m., the president then tweeting that Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done. The committee saying the crowd seeing that tweet and reacting later those words, the chants, hang Mike Pence. The vice president later rushed out of the Senate chamber with his family to another room and then down to a secure underground location. At one point, they were just 40 feet from that mob, where he spent the next 4 hours, a confidential informant actually telling the FBI that the extremist group, the Proud Boys, would have killed Mike Pence if given the chance. The testimony today, what the president repeatedly ignored from those closest to him about what was legal, what was not, and what had never been done in the history of the United States. Still, the president pushed for it. Here's our chief Washington correspondent, Jonathan Carl, leading us off tonight.
In meticulous detail, the January 6th committee outlined Donald Trump's brazen effort to force his vice president to do something he clearly had no authority to do. Trump wanted Mike Pence to single-handedly overturn the election. Pence had told him no, but on the morning of January 6th, Trump called him one more time to demand that he do it.
When I entered the office the second time, he was on the telephone with who I later found out to be was the vice president.
Could you hear the vice president or only hear the president's end?
Only hear the president's end. And at some point it started off as a calmer tone and everything and then became heated.
The conversation was pretty heated. It was a different tone than I'd heard him take with the vice president before.
I remember hearing the word wimp. Either he called him a wimp. I don't remember if he said, you are a wimp, you'll be a wimp. Wimp is the word I remember.
Less than an hour after that call, Trump addressed the massive crowd outside the White House. Aides testified that his prepared speech made no mention of Pence. But when he spoke, Trump repeatedly told the crowd that Mike Pence was the one person who could do what they wanted, overturning Biden's election victory.
Mike Pence is going to have to come through for us. And if he doesn't, that will be a sad day for our country. And Mike Pence, I hope you're going to stand up for the good of our Constitution and for the good of our country. And if you're not, I'm going to be very disappointed in you, I will tell you right now.
Trump was still speaking when Pence publicly announced he would defy Trump, remaining loyal to the Constitution instead.
I mean, the vice president had said, this may be the most important thing I ever say.
The statement.
The statement. And he really wanted to make sure that it was just so.
We're coming for you!
The reaction of the mob was instantaneous.
I'm telling you what, I'm hearing the Pence. I hear the Pence just caved.
No.
Is that true?
I'm hearing
reports that Pence caved.
No
I'm
way.
Telling you, if Pence caved, we're going to drag through the streets. You politicians are going to get drugged through the streets.
Yeah. President Trump watched it all unfold on television from the White House. Aides testified that Chief of Staff Mark Meadows went in to tell him about the violence at the Capitol, and Republican lawmakers and White House aides urged him to get his supporters to stand down. Instead, at 2:24 p.m., the president sent out a message attacking his vice president.
Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution.
In the White House, Trump's own aides were shocked by his tweet.
When that tweet, the Mike Pence tweet, was sent out, I remember us saying that that was the last thing that needed to be tweeted at that moment. The situation was already bad, and so it felt like he was pouring gasoline on the fire by tweeting that.
Nothing but a traitor, and he deserves to burn with the rest of them.
We just heard that Mike Pence is not going to reject any fraudulent electoral vote!
You're a traitor!
That's right! You've heard it here first! Mike Pence has betrayed the United States of America!
As the mob broke into the Capitol, Pence was evacuated from the Senate floor to a nearby office, huddling with his family, his wife pulling the curtains so the mob wouldn't see them. Then, with the rioters just 40 feet away, the Secret Service rushed the vice president, his family, and top aides to a secure underground location. Pence Chief of Staff Greg Jacob was there with him.
Approximately 40 feet. That's all there was. 40 feet between the vice president and the mob. Mr. Jacob, you were there, seeing that for the first time.
I could hear the din of the rioters in the building while we moved, but I don't think I was aware that they were as close as that.
The Secret Service had cars in that underground parking garage, waiting to take Pence safely away from the Capitol.
Secret Service directed us to get into the cars, which I did. And then I noticed that the vice president had not. Head of his Secret Service detail, Tim, had said, I assure you, we're not going to drive out of the building without your permission. And the vice president had said something to the effect of, Tim, I know you, I trust you, but you're not the one behind the wheel. And the vice president did not want to take any chance that the world would see the vice president of the United States fleeing the United States Capitol.
The January 6th committee showed these never-before-seen photos, the vice president working the phones in that concrete garage for some 3 hours, without even a chair to sit in.
Mr. Jacob, did Donald Trump ever call the vice president to check on his safety?
He did not.
Mr. Jacob, how did Vice President Pence and Mrs. Pence react to that?
With frustration.
Even after the attack, after the mob was cleared from the Capitol, Trump and his allies kept the pressure on Pence. Shortly before he was to certify the election, John Eastman, a lawyer advising Trump, emailed the vice president's counsel, saying it wasn't too late for Pence to change his mind.
What was Vice President Pence's reaction when you showed him the email where Dr. Eastman, after the attack on the Capitol, still asked that the vice president delay certification and send it back to the states?
He said, that's rubber room stuff.
What did you interpret that to mean?
That was certifiably crazy.
Mr. Jacob testified that the vice president was never going to go along with Trump's scheme.
The vice president's first instinct when he heard this theory was that there was no way that our framers, who abhorred concentrated power, who had broken away from the tyranny of George III, would ever have put one person in a role to have decisive impact on the outcome of the election.
Pence knew that Trump was asking him to do something illegal and something that no other vice president had ever attempted.
No vice president in 230 years of history had ever claimed to have that kind of authority.
For guidance, Pence turned to former Judge Michael Luttig, a widely respected conservative appointed by George H.W. Bush. Luttig today declared if Pence had done what Trump wanted him to do, the consequences would have been dire.
That declaration of Donald Trump as the next president would have plunged America into what I believe would have been tantamount to a revolution within a constitutional crisis in America.
John Carr with us live from Capitol Hill tonight. John, you were on the air with us today all day long, and I know ABC News has learned that Donald Trump and Mike Pence haven't talked since last summer.
It's been a year, almost a year since they last talked, but Pence has said publicly and bluntly he believes Donald Trump was wrong, and quote, there's almost no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the president.
And John, one more question for you tonight. We learned today that after it became clear that the election would not be overturned the night of January 6th, that lawyer that President Trump had teamed up with on this scheme to halt the certification, John Eastman, that lawyer asked to be then included on the list of possible pardons?
He was looking for a pardon, and when he testified before this committee on video, David, that's him on the left, he took the Fifth Amendment more than 100 times, refusing to answer his questions.
John Carl with us tonight on this again. John, our thanks to you. We turn next tonight to the severe storms in the east as we're on the air tonight. A tornado watch now in effect for parts of Pennsylvania and New York tonight. Severe thunderstorms, in fact, from the Carolinas all the way up to the northeast. Senior meteorologist Rob Marciano tracking it all again tonight for us. Hey, Rob.
Hi, David. Big tornado watch up for Pennsylvania and New York. And inside that, in Cayuga County, baseball-sized hail coming down. Look at this cluster of storms going through Syracuse right now. That watch is up until 11 o'clock. D.C., you got some action. So did the Carolinas. And there's trees down all over these states. They're bumping up into that heat, which across the Mid-South is going to be big time again. Tomorrow we might see records falls. This is dangerous levels at night. 105 in Little Rock, 103 in Nashville. A bit suppression Saturday and Sunday. But look how it rebuilds come Monday and Tuesday for places like Atlanta and Chicago. Another heat wave coming. David?
And very early this year. Rob Marciano, thank you. We move now to the war in Ukraine, and tonight it's now believed three Americans fighting for Ukraine are now missing. And this image tonight, at least two of the Americans now feared captured by Russia. Our foreign correspondent James Longman with late reporting from inside Ukraine tonight.
Tonight, the State Department revealing it's tracking a third American fighter reportedly missing in Ukraine.
Our understanding was that this individual had traveled to Ukraine to take up arms.
The two others, former Army Staff Sergeant Alex Druki and former Marine Corporal Andy Huyn, were fighting alongside the Ukrainians and are now thought captured by Russia. Huyn spoke to our Huntsville, Alabama affiliate by phone in April before he left.
I made peace with the decision. I know there's a potential of me dying.
I'm willing to give my life for what I believe is right, for what I've been taught what is right.
Both men were last heard from a week ago. Quinn's fiance telling ABC News he felt called to help.
He couldn't sit idly by. He couldn't eat. He couldn't sleep, knowing that the people over there were suffering.
And Druki's mother says he wanted to fight for democracy.
He felt that he was best used by training soldiers, and especially on the American equipment that's being sent over there.
This is the leaders of France, Germany, Italy, and Romania visited Kyiv today. President Zelensky saying Russia wants to show that the European Union is incapable of being effective and that European values cannot work to protect freedom. We can and must work together.
So let's get right to James Longman live inside Ukraine tonight. And James, of course, those images coming in late today appearing to show those two American veterans detained. What more do we know about them tonight?
Well, Alex Druki's family has released a statement saying their contact at the State Department is aware of the photograph and is working to verify it. David?
James Longman in Ukraine for us again tonight. Thank you, James. In the meantime, we're going to turn now to the daring U.S. raid in Syria that ended with the capture of a top ISIS leader. The U.S. says that leader had planned attacks on American forces before. Mary Bruce with new details tonight on the daring operation that captured him alive.
The raid by U.S. Special Forces launched under the cover of night into rebel-held northwest Syria, reportedly landing in this village. Capturing an ISIS leader, the U.S. says is responsible for coordinating attacks on American forces. Hani Ahmed al-Kurdi, an experienced bomb maker. There were no U.S. injuries and no damage to any military aircraft. It's the latest daring mission in the same region where ISIS leader al-Baghdadi and his successor blew themselves up after being cornered by U.S. troops. ISIS was territorially defeated in Syria in 2019. But in January, hundreds of fighters escaped during a brazen prison break in the northeast. Now, because he was captured alive, al-Kurdi is a potentially valuable source of information about ISIS and its network around the world. Tonight, he is in custody and is being questioned. David.
All right, Mary Bruce, live at the White House. Thank you, Mary. Here at home, yet another new setback tonight in this struggle to get baby formula back on the shelves in the U.S. Tonight, that plant at the center of the shortage, Abbott Nutrition's formula plant in Sturgis, Michigan, it's now closed again, this time because of storm-related flooding, just 2 weeks after it reopened. They say it could take weeks now to reopen again. We turn now to the economy and your money in a day after that massive federal interest rate hike. President Biden addressing the growing fear of recession in an Oval Office interview today, saying it's not inevitable that we'll have a recession because the U.S. is in a better position than any other country, he said, to overcome this. But he said he also knows that people in this country are really, really down. The Dow falling below 30,000 today. It's the lowest point in more than a year. And so we know part of what's driving this, of course. Let's get right back to Rebecca Jarvis tonight. Rebecca?
And David, you can think of this as Wall Street confronting its new normal. For the last decade, the Federal Reserve has kept interest rates near 0%, helping to prop up the economy and helping to drive up things like stocks, cryptocurrencies, and home values. But faced with historic inflation, the Fed must now do the opposite. They must hike interest rates to drive prices lower, even if it poses a risk of a recession. David?
All right, Rebecca Jarvis with us here again tonight. Thank you, Rebecca. And in Uvalde, Texas tonight, we cannot forget the funerals that continue. 11-year-old Layla Salazar was laid to rest today. Her family saying she loved singing, dancing, koala bears, and the Dallas Cowboys. Her father, Vincent, holding a photo of her saying they would sing together every morning on their drive to school together. 21 victims in all. Layla is the 20th funeral. The final, the 21st funeral, will happen on Saturday. When we come back here tonight, the chilling subway accident here in New York City, the passenger dragged by a train. And then later here tonight, Elon Musk's Twitter town hall and his message tonight to some nervous employees.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan.
It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight in New York City, a horrific subway accident is now under investigation. Authorities say a passenger was killed after his foot got stuck in the gap between the train and the platform in Brooklyn. The train then leaving the station, dragging him until he fell onto the tracks. He was then struck by another subway. A person hearing his pleas for help could not get to him in time. To the index of other news, and Elon Musk, who has been vocal about it being time to stop working from home and getting back to work, addressing Twitter employees for the first time today during a virtual town hall. Musk is in the process of buying Twitter for $44 billion, telling workers today he wants the platform to be a place for free speech. He says, quote, exceptional employees can keep working remotely, but that he believes remote work hurts morale. He also would not rule out layoffs. Finally tonight, the countdown is on. The big showdown in Boston tonight, Game 6 of the NBA Finals. The Golden State Warriors need one more win. The Celtics fighting for survival. Both teams sharing photos of players getting ready for tonight. The Celtics tweeting, using every opportunity to improve. The game 9 Eastern right here on ABC. And from my time in Boston, they're not going down without a fight. We'll see you later. Good night.